Brian Noonan is playing on the radio, baby.
News, traffic, sports, weather. News, traffic, sports, weather. News, traffic, sports, weather. News, traffic, sports, weather.
The bell tolls. It's Noonan o'clock.
I hear voices in my head. They talk to me.
You ain't stealing my pot pie.
Bernard, did you rip up the store today?
Yeah, he's got the foot holes.
No, Mama, I was a good employee today.
Well, son, I said, son, let me get myself a daiquiri over here.
Run down, pick me up a moon pie and an RC Cola. I'm going to meet you down by Kirk, we'll do the wash.
You could say I'm a little bit crazy.
That is the most sinister call laugh that we've ever had on this program, Cody. You need to isolate that laugh.
Noonan o'clock.
Boy, I tell you, it gets out of hand in a hurry.
Well, it's the big show. Yes, it's a big, bad show tonight.
Good morning. Welcome. Glad you're with me. Brian Noonan in for Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN Wednesday morning. Oh, show 3 of 5. Dan Long is here producing. We're almost there, Dan. We're hump day. This is exciting. We've climbed the mountain. Now we're about to ascend over the peak and head down into the valley.
I can feel the peak right now.
It's very exciting. Very exciting. It's always more exciting, though, when you're involved in the program. 312-981-7200. That's the phone. That's the text. When you do call in, you will be talking to the aforementioned Dan Long. He's the executive producer of the big broadcast. If you're nice to him, you get to me. And if you want to stay in touch with us on social media, it's Brian Noonan Show on Facebook and Twitter. There's Vic Vaughn wearing a sport coat tonight, all dressed up, very journalistic. Looking dapper, Vic. Wow.
I had it on yesterday, Brian.
Did you?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was, I don't know. Did you have a sport coat on yesterday?
It's made for the winter, so it's kind of a nice, warm sports coat.
Oh, it looks very nice.
Yeah, thank you.
Sorry I didn't see it yesterday. I don't know what was going on yesterday. I feel like I've neglected something, like I've missed out. But, well, we're glad you're here, and we're glad you're all dressed up. Somebody ought to dress up for this thing, Dan. Somebody ought to look professional. I'm wearing a Guinness, like, hockey sweater. You got a Springsteen T-shirt. And then there's Vic in the newsroom. He's got a dress shirt and a sport coat, ascot, spats, top hat, cummerbund. He's got it all.
If you got an extra jersey, I'll put it on.
No. I like a guy who comes in professional. You remind me of old timey broadcasters, which I like. A guy who come to work in a suit.
I might have to shave tomorrow. You're inspiring me.
That would be a change for one of us. I realize today I haven't shaved in a week, and I'm realizing I don't think I can grow the beard. Dan, you're a beard guy. You can give me the opinion. Vic, you're a beard guy too. Mine is coming in almost completely white. I think that would make me look a little too old. And I'm old enough already without the Santa Claus beard, I think. Your opinion as dark beard gentleman?
I think you see what it looks like when it comes in, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I say let it rip.
Right.
Yeah, let it go.
You sprinkle a little Just for Men in there, get the salt and pepper look
me
going.
Me and Keith Hernandez brushing things onto our face. Like, I will say, years ago, when I lived in Los Angeles, I had a goatee. I've experimented with all sorts of facial hair, from the Fu Manchu to the goatee to the full beard.
Like, there was a period, like, in the 90s where every Major League Baseball player at least had a goatee.
Yes.
I don't know if that extends to the general population.
Everybody. There's still a lot of guys with goatees. Not as much. Now the full beard, now the big hipster beard is back, which I enjoy. But I was out there, and in Los Angeles, you can't really be your age. You have to be, like, you take off the LA 5 when people ask how old you are. And so I had this goatee, but there were a couple gray spots in it, because in the old days, if you put your thumb and your index finger on the sides of your chin, I had two spots of white, like somebody, like your grandma had dipped her fingers in paint and then grabbed your chin and went, "Aren't you such a cutie boy?" So I had these gray spots, and I thought, well, you know, I can't have a gray beard in Los Angeles. I have to be young if I'm going to go out for, you know, fat guy at the mall number three for some feature film. So I started using that comb in dye stuff. And I remember walking into my agent's office and he looked at me, he goes, stop coloring your beard. And I go, what do you mean? I'm not. He goes, shut up. You're coloring your beard. Stop it.
That's hilarious.
Okay. Because they tell you that, you know, no one will notice. But for the most part, unless you go to a professional, if you go to a, you know, a salon, I almost said beautician, like I'm in Greece, like, not Greece the country, but Greece the movie. Like I went to a beauty school dropout. If you go to some professional, they can color your hair to make it look natural. When you're standing in the bathroom in your underpants, it's a little harder to do a professional job.
Agreed. You know, I've used that stuff before too, Brian, and yeah, and the reason I quit using it was because you're going to get to a point, I'm going to get to a point in my life where it just doesn't look natural, and
right.
Everybody's going to know it except me.
Yeah.
So I just stopped using it.
Yeah, you'll be the guy who goes, don't I look fantastic?
Right.
Well, the top of your head is white, and you have a jet black beard.
Exactly.
It's very strange. Suddenly you got that comic book, it's so black, it's navy blue kind of look to your hair. And you're right, Vic, everybody knows it's not real. Everybody knows it's fake. So I don't know. I'm debating with this beard thing because I'm taking over a second grade class on Monday, and I don't know how the children will react to a bearded Mr. Noonan. I'm already a tad imposing and intimidating for the youths.
Well, because it's Christmas time, they might think you look like jolly old Saint Nick.
Yeah, until I open my mouth and they realize, man, Santa is upset. Santa's not putting up with any of our garbage. We got to do our work. I don't know what's up with Santa. If you have not heard, folks, if you have romaine lettuce in your refrigerator, throw it out. Unfortunately, you know when I read this story? After I got home from Jewel buying some lettuce mix, which has romaine in it. And that is one of the things. It says it doesn't matter if the romaine is chopped, whole head, or part of a mix. All romaine should be avoided. Now, there's a part of me that says I should take this salad back to Jewel, but there's the other part of me that's like, oh, I'm too lazy to go back and deal with the line of customer service for, you know, $2.50. Not that I have money to burn, but there's a point, we all have this moment where we decide if our time is worth more than the money we'll get back. You know, is it worth me taking the hit for the $2.50 because it was on sale, or do I go back and stand in line and hope that they'll say, well, listen, we didn't taint the romaine lettuce? So the CDC, they put out this alert. They said 32 people in 11 states have become sick from eating contaminated romaine. 13 have been hospitalized. This is why you should just eat junk food, because salad is dangerous. One patient suffering a form of kidney failure. So up to this point, thankfully, no deaths have been reported. It is the origin of the outbreak is unknown, and it remains under investigation. There's been a lot of romaine has taken a beating in the last few months. It's got this common strain of E. coli was detected in 6 of the sickened people. It appears to match the bacterial strain found in an outbreak of illnesses from contaminated leafy greens late last year that affected people in both U.S. and Canada. 5 people died in the most major outbreak from contaminated romaine. That was from March to June. And I'm not going to go into trying to name the official strain of the bacteria because I dropped out of med school, so the pronunciation of these would just make me sound kind of dumb. We do have a big show. I mentioned it before. In just a few minutes, we're going to talk to Andy Cole from the Dad's Chapter of the Leukemia Research Foundation. They have a big event coming up that I am happy to be a part of. And then after 2 o'clock, Doug Cummings is going to join us. If you recognize that name, you say, well, oh, wait, I've heard Doug on Nick's show before. Yes, you have. Doug, a former crime reporter on WGN. He's an author, and he now does workshops for personal safety and things like that. So we are going to talk about, in general, the shooting yesterday at Mercy Hospital and what we can do to try to stay safe. So we are going to talk about that. Then some facts about the Macy's Parade, which is coming up Thursday morning, of course. Directions, would you leave? We leave directions for everybody else, especially if you have children and your babysitter's coming over. Would you leave written directions for grandparents taking care of the kids? Oh, man, that'll get some people riled up. And then a very horrible school policy. And finally, we're going to wrap things up with a toy that seems so dangerous to most people with common sense, and yet, oh man, it's going to be a hot one on the market this year for the holiday season. So all of that coming up. Talk to Andy Cole in just a minute. It's Brian Noonan in for Nick on 720 WGN. Brian in for Nick. Nick on vacation. He'll be back Monday morning. Dan Long, Vic Vaughn, and I with you through the week, having a wonderful time. Some people are not having a wonderful time because they are suffering with leukemia or one of the many blood cancers. The Dad's Chapter of the Leukemia Research Foundation is every year they put on a wonderful event called Rockin' for a Cure. And to tell us about it, I welcome Andy Cole, who is part of the Dad's Chapter. Andy, welcome. Good morning. Thanks for staying up late.
Oh, no, that's okay, Brian. I have to get up in 4 or 5 hours to go to work anyway, so I might as well just stick it out.
Yeah, listen, if you stay up late, there's a lot of things going on in the middle of the night that people who sleep don't realize. So it might be fun for you. Just stay up. Wander around. Wander the streets. Wander the streets and make plans. And make plans for Rockin' for a Cure, which is coming up Thursday, December 6th. Now, people who have gone to this event in the past are like, we know all about this event. We've been there before. No, this year, completely different, starting with the venue, correct?
Absolutely. Completely different from, and this is, I think, Rockin' number 15, and you have been a part of almost every one of them.
We
so much appreciate that.
Oh, and it's been my pleasure. Yeah, I can't. You brought this up last year, and I couldn't believe that I'd been working with you, and you guys have been, desperate enough to keep me around for all those years. It's been a lot of fun. But it used to be at a venue in Palatine, and now you have moved to Arlington Heights.
We'll be in Arlington Heights at the Home Bar in Arlington Heights. And HOME is an acronym for House of Music and Entertainment.
Perfect.
So this is a bigger venue. It's really cool. They have, if you like going to bars, this is the place to be because they got everything there. They got pool tables, dartboards, video gaming, and of course we'll be there taking over the main stage on Thursday, December 6th. And we have a new band this year.
Yes, who is this new band?
The new band is anybody who's been to any of the festivals around Chicago over the past several years has heard of the Modern Day Romeos. And they're kind enough to be with us this year, and we just can't wait to hear them. They're going to be really exciting. It's going to be a great time.
It's going to be a lot of fun. Tell people what the Dad's Chapter is, Andy.
Dad's Chapter, well, Leukemia Research Foundation is a charity that's been in the Chicago area. This is a Chicago-based group, and they've been around for about a little over 70 years now. And all the money raised from Rockin' goes to benefit people who have blood cancers and their families for patient support, research. I mean, they do a lot of amazing work. University of Chicago is at the forefront of a lot of the research that's done. One of the really nice things about the Leukemia Research Foundation is there's a service that rates charities in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And LRF has gotten the highest ratings possible every year for the past several years, and it's based upon how the money is used and how expenses are kept down. And so when you give to the Leukemia Research Foundation, the money's going for its intended purpose, and it really makes a huge difference, and there have been so many breakthroughs. The only bad thing is, and they probably don't like me saying this, but you even sort of alluded to it. You said everybody's having a great time, but except people with blood cancers in it. So we're talking about this really fun event. Everybody's
right.
Going to have a great time. And the website is allbloodcancers.org. It's a little tough to sell fun when you're talking about blood cancers, but it's kind of a necessary thing because we want to help these people.
Well, and nobody's going to raise money if you put on a real depressing event. So the best way to raise money is to get people together, make them have a good time, let them have a good time, give them a couple cocktails so that loosens up the credit card, slides out of the wallet much easier after you had one or two drinks, and that's what you need. You need those kind of events to raise money to continue making the breakthroughs that you talked about earlier. Again, it is allbloodcancers.org/rockin. That's where you can go to get all the information. So, all right, we've mentioned that it's in a new venue, and there's a modern day Romeos are going to play, and they're gonna sound great. What else can people expect when they show up to Rockin' for a Cure?
Well, look, we got some really great raffle prizes this year. We got an autographed picture of Fergie Jenkins from, I think it's his rookie year. It was somewhere, it was 65, I forget which year, 66 maybe, 67. Him sitting in front of his locker. And we have a wonderful treat from GT Prime Steakhouse there over at, in the 700 block of North Wells.
Uh-oh.
Chef Giuseppe is going to do a special chef's dinner for two at GT Prime. If you're looking for a stodgy, not chic steakhouse, don't go there, because this place is amazingly decorated. It is so upscale, and the staff is they're just a lot of fun, you know, and the food is unbelievable there. And it's not just steak. I don't know if they have a kitchen. It seems more like a laboratory, because they combine flavors that you never even think of. And you say, this steak can't possibly taste good, and then you want to get some more. It's just an amazing place. So we got that going on. We have pictures of Ian Happ. The Bear sent us an autographed picture. We got with Trubisky, Floyd, Jerome Howard, there's one other guy on it who's, I can't recall on it at the moment. Something that's near and dear to your and my heart, being the two Sox fans left in town. We got an autographed picture of Jose Abreu.
There you go. Very nice. So, yeah, there's always wonderful, wonderful prizes on the silent auction. And is Don still going to be holding out the wingspans for the tickets? That's a very unique way. Tell people about the unique way that we sell those tickets, those raffle tickets.
Yeah, so we call our raffle tickets, when you buy raffle tickets, now you can buy, if you want to, you can buy five or six tickets for $5.
Nah,
but
come
most
on,
people
nah,
don't do that.
No, nah, that's silly.
And because we have, I don't know, 60, 70 prizes, and so you take your tickets and you put them in the prize bucket for the prize that you're interested in. And so if you got all these prizes, six or seven tickets isn't gonna do, so you need a bunch of tickets. Well,
sure.
In order to get a bunch of tickets, we got this tall, lanky guy, and he takes the roll of tickets, and he stretches his arms out, and we call it a wingspan. And that's Captain Wingspan Don Colo who does that. And so you get, for $30 or two wingspans for $50, you get, I don't know, it's like 45, 50 tickets.
Yeah, you get a ton of tickets.
Each wingspan. So,
you're getting a lot, and
so
you're doing
you get
a special offer.
You get tons of ways to win prizes that way. And when we got some of these things are in silent auction, and so you can do that. But I thought maybe, and I haven't discussed this with the committee, I just thought I'd discuss it with you, maybe we can work out something where we can have like a little mini version of the overnight arcade.
Oh, perhaps.
What do you think?
We'll talk about it. We'll talk about it at the planning meeting, which happens off the air. But yes, I'm up for pretty much anything. You know that about me, Andy. Also, this is for speaking of the wingspans. If you were one of the first 50 people who purchased two wingspans of tickets, you're going to get a free drink ticket.
Well, that's that lubricant you were talking
about.
Yeah,
that's what we
yes.
need. It's
and
terrific.
That works wonders. You're absolutely right. So, you know, it's this event, we've been doing this a long time now, and if we were going to do an event that wasn't any fun, we wouldn't keep doing this one.
Exactly.
This evening flies by, and you're one of the big reasons that the evening flies by, because you make the event so much fun, and you really do. And so anybody who wants to just come and hang out with Brian, this is a great time to do it, because when Brian's not up on stage handling the auction and the raffle, he's sitting, listening to the band, having dinner.
Maybe we do.
Very approachable.
Maybe instead of the arcade, we do Dime a Dance. You know, you want to dance with me during the modern day Romeos? You know, it's $10.
Well, you know what? I thought I had all your dances this year.
Well, listen, you know, you get a little handsy after a couple drinks, so we'll see how that works out. Tickets are only $25, but if this is a great event, if you want to do it for work or if you have a group, we always have a lot of groups who come in. You can get a deal, $20 for groups of 10 or more. It's going to be a lot of fun, as it always is. Rockin' for a Cure is Thursday, December 6th at Home Bar and Entertainment Center, which is at 1227 North Rand Road in Arlington Heights. It starts at 7. Modern Day Romeos will be there. I'll be there. You can you can bid on all sorts of stuff. You could the raffles. I have to ask: are the giant Rice Krispie treat pads going to be there, Andy? An annual favorite.
Now, you know, if I said no, I'd disappoint you. So, yes, Rich Reeder has gotten us the giant Rice Krispie treats, compliments of Kellogg's. So, I know where your tickets are going.
People go crazy trying to win these Rice Krispie treats. It's nuts. People love Rice Krispies, and especially when they're giant like that. It's just
these
so much
fun.
These are
giant. They are. I mean, these are like
a couple pounds
two
each.
Feet by two. Yeah, I mean, these are huge Rice Krispie treats, so... You know, Snap, Crackle, and Pop have suddenly grown to epic proportions. And
exactly. So if you want to get tickets, if you want to go to Rockin' for a Cure and help out a wonderful cause, go to allbloodcancers.org/rockin'. Get your tickets. Come on out.
Not the / rockin'. Just go to allbloodcancers.org.
And
you'll see, hover over chapter events, and you'll see us in there.
All right.
And even if you just want to make a donation, you can do that. But we hope to see... We hope all the Brian Noonan fans will be out there. That's what we're looking for.
We need a lot more people than that, Andy. We got to get a lot of people in the building. Andy, always a pleasure to talk to you. We will talk to you very soon, and I will see you on December 6th.
That sounds great. Thanks for having me, Brian. We appreciate all your help over the years.
My pleasure. All right, that's Andy Cole, the Dad's Chapter of the Leukemia Research Foundation. Again, go to allbloodcancers.org. Get your tickets now. Bring a group. It's a lot of fun. The Modern Day Romeos will be there. I'll be there. And you can bid and just buy raffle tickets for wonderful, wonderful prizes. News is next. Thanks, Vic. Brian Noonan in for Nick D. He will be back next week. But the leftover preparation has begun at the Noonan house, and which is strange to say because we're going out for Thanksgiving dinner. As I mentioned, my mom and one of my brothers, my sister-in-law, my three nieces, we're all going out for dinner. But my daughter, who is coming home in a few hours, said she wants leftovers. I won't have my turkey sandwich. And now she's going to eat probably one turkey sandwich, but I'm a sucker. And so I said, all right, well, I'll cook a turkey breast and I'll make the cornbread dressing that my brother usually makes. He's on safari. He left today for Tanzania. Two of my brothers are now jetting their way to Africa to go on safari. I'm going to Oak Brook for dinner. Who's got a more exciting time for Thanksgiving? One will be wrestling a rhinoceros. I will be in a buffet line with overstuffed people in fancy clothes.
You haven't lived until you've seen the majesty of I-88.
That's probably true. You take that curve and you're by the McDonald's headquarters. Oh, man. The world is your oyster at that point. It just opens up in front of you. It's like in The Wizard of Oz when it went from black and white to color. Just everything like, oh, I hear angels sing. And then I realize, oh, I probably should have just taken 22nd Street over. Makes it easier to exit. But anyway, so I told you yesterday I went to the grocery store. Today I started some prep work. So I made my cranberry jelly, my cranberry sauce, which is easy. If you don't know how to make cranberry sauce, the easiest thing for Thanksgiving. If anybody ever asks you over for Thanksgiving and you say, and you offer to bring cranberry sauce, cup of water, cup of sugar, you boil it with the cranberries in there, they pop, poof, 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 poof. You let it cool. Hey, look how much work I did. I got cranberry sauce.
I was going to say just plop it out of the can and have it leave the shape of the or leave it in the shape of the can.
That's the big debate. Some people will not eat the fresh stuff. They only want the canned stuff. And so a lot of times at my brother's house, he will have both because he usually handles Thanksgiving. So he'll have both. And I don't understand it.
That's a picky Thanksgiving eater right there. If you have to have your cranberry sauce a certain way.
Well,
that's only eaten once a year.
If it doesn't have the ridges, Dan, it's not the right kind. What is this stuff that looks like real fruit? I don't want that. No chance, pal. I want my cranberries to slice, not scoop. And the thing is, I never liked the cranberry jelly from the can, but I like the fresh stuff.
I do too.
It's the same stuff, and it's real easy. So anyway, I made that, and then I cut up and dried all my cornbread for the dressing that I have to make. But I realized, so I go. I had bought a frozen turkey breast. And Sunday morning, I got up bright and early, and I took it out of the freezer because I had looked on the Butterball website, and we're going to be talking tomorrow morning, just in case you're panicking, We are going to have a representative from the Butterball Turkey Talk Line on at 1:15 to help you with your last-minute turkey question. So if you have a problem, be sure you are listening tomorrow morning, and she can help. So I had gone on their website to see how long it takes to defrost a turkey breast. And at my poundage, my weight, not my weight, my personal weight, I would never defrost. If I was frozen, you could set me in a refrigerator for 38 days, and I would still be rock hard. That's probably going on out of context.
It's 1:38 on Wednesday morning.
So mark your tapes, folks. Anyway, it said it should take about 2 days and 6 hours for me to defrost this turkey breast. Vic, I'm going to give you a chance to win no prizes by answering this question correctly. Now, my turkey, when I checked on it today at 5 p.m., had been in the refrigerator for 57 hours. 57 hours. How much progress do you think it had made in its defrosting?
Well, it should be done, right?
Yeah, it should be. Should be.
Not the case, huh?
No.
Oh, no.
No. And I know it was
what's the 2 day? You're not supposed to leave that.
No, you put it in the refrigerator.
Right. So
for
that
2 days.
Should be done, right?
Right. So now I have to put it on the hood of the car when I drive around.
Maybe. Does your turkey have... No, all turkeys come with the gobble, all the stuff
the
inside,
giblets?
Right? The giblets.
Yeah, they should be in there goblets. In a pack. Pick of goblets. Oh, if my turkey came with a goblet, that would be fantastic. That turkey is regal. You noticed my turkey. Yes, that goblet is it's the turkey's goblet. So I don't know. So I moved it. I had it in the refrigerator in the basement, and I know it's a refrigerator because that's where all my beer is. So I moved it to a refrigerator where I keep food. I don't know if that's going to change anything. But I figure if not, then tomorrow I have to plunk it in the sink.
That's exactly what I can hear Jeannie in my ear. Just put it in water. I don't think you're supposed to, but I've heard that might be.
You can. Not the preferred method. The preferred method is in the refrigerator. But in a pinch, they say you can put it in a sink of cold water, and you change the water every half hour, and it's supposed to take a half hour per pound.
Cold water, not
cold. Cold water to defrost this turkey.
That might have to be your go-to.
It's going to have to be because I have to
crunch
cook
time.
It so that Thursday night it's technically leftovers. And I don't, you know why I did this? Not so, you could say, oh, you did it because you're a loving father. And no, I did it so I didn't have to listen to anybody complain on Thursday night that they didn't get a turkey sandwich before I went to work. Because I would have said, did you like going out for dinner with grandma and, everybody else? Yeah, it was terrific, but now we don't have any leftovers.
Insight into the lengths that a father will go to avoid hearing people complain.
Yeah, because my dad used to say this, and I never believed it. Anytime we asked him for a birthday holiday, oh, is there anything we can give you? Yeah, peace and quiet. That's my entire goal, is to just have everything go along calmly. Everybody relax. We just move along. Oh, everything's perfect. But no, that's not, now somebody texting in from the 815 that the cold water method almost killed him. Was she trying to defrost you? Did she keep you in a sink of water for 8 hours, or was it the turkey? And if you cook the turkey long enough, it's going to kill anything. It's going to kill anything anyway, as long as you get it up to that right internal temperature. And again, we'll check on all this tomorrow with the Butterball Turkey Talk Line.
Yeah, I'd be interested to see what she says about the water method. Well, I know it's not the preferred, but
it is on their website.
Unsafe?
That is,
oh,
they
is?
Do, yeah. They give you that option. So it's, I figure if it's, if it's endorsed by Butterball, that's going to be fine. We'll see. But if I don't make it in Thursday night, well, I won't be eating any of those till Friday. So I won't get sick till after. I'll fulfill my obligation here on the Nick DiGilio show, and then I'll, be bedridden. Yes, Dan, you...
I was just saying, you don't have to... It's the leftovers, right? You don't have to eat any of it at all.
That's true. I don't have to. I'm going to have a fresh Thanksgiving dinner.
Or you could float the test sandwich out there and then see.
See, that's what it's going to happen, because they'll be eating them when I come here to get ready for the show. So if I go home Friday morning and they're all curled up in the bathroom with buckets, then, guess who's avoiding... the Thanksgiving. All right, Glenn wants to jump in. Give me some turkey advice. Glenn, do you work for a large turkey manufacturer, or are you just a guy who knows what he's talking about?
Well, neither.
All right, perfect.
But we have in the past, we've taken the bird and we put it in an ice, in an ice chest. We fill it with ice and water and then put the bird in there to defrost. Then it doesn't take up that much room in the refrigerator, and it's safely defrosted.
Okay.
57 hours.
Yeah,
I've even heard that you can cook the damn bird frozen.
Well, yeah, it should be defrosted.
You get the giblets out.
Because I put it in at 8 o'clock Sunday morning. I took it out of the freezer.
It should be done.
I know.
Throw it away and go to a restaurant.
Yeah. Maybe I can find a fresh one.
But
this one only cost me a couple bucks. You know, turkeys are cheap this time of year. So maybe I find
like I said, we've defrosted it in an ice cooler.
All
right.
And
then you stick it in ice and water. And it defrosts it. And then it keeps the temperature down so it doesn't make anyone sick.
All right. Well, that sounds like what I got to do then when I get home this morning is get the cooler out and start doing some drown this turkey and see what's going on. Glenn, thank you for the advice. I appreciate it. Have a happy Thanksgiving. I'm hearing the McDonald's headquarters now off Fulton in the City Building. The one in Oak Brook is empty. That's all right. I can always have my memories. But now you've ruined Thanksgiving for me. Thank you. Let's take a quick break. Then, since we're talking about poisoning ourselves on Thanksgiving, I've got some warnings for leftovers. Because you gotta be ready to go. So we'll talk about that after this. WGN. People love Thanksgiving leftovers. If you're leaving somebody's house, it's the who wants to take some food with them? And then all the Ziploc bags come out, or the little containers, or the paper plates with the cellophane over them, or the tin foil. Everybody takes leftovers. Well, be careful. I'm here to warn you. 7 Thanksgiving leftovers you might not want to save. Oh, boy. I like to spread a little terror. Everybody's so happy on the holidays. I like to come in with a little terror, Dan. I like to scare people just a little bit.
I do love a good news tease.
Sure, you got to. Oh, your dinner can kill you.
Is something in your fridge tearing your family apart?
Could your potatoes mean the end of civilization? Maybe. Is your dairy-based gravy about to cause mass homicides? Yes, it is, actually. Homemade gravy can go bad after just one day in the fridge, according to this. Many gravies have a dairy base, and that doesn't do well in the cold. The longer it's stored, the more potential it has for bacteria growth. I'm doing these stories to combat. Last night we talked about food that made us all very, very hungry. So I'm combating that by tonight doing stories about things that could kill you.
All food poisoning.
Yes, all
hours.
Food poisoning nonstop. We started with some romaine lettuce. Now we're moving into dairy-based gravy. Now, I didn't know this. Improperly stored potatoes can cause food poisoning. This, according to The Independent, the problem with reheated potatoes is not the reheating, but how you store the potatoes after they are cooked. So, you know, when you're Thanksgiving dinner, you're done and things are out on the counter for a little bit as you start to pack them up because, you know, you're talking, you're enjoying your pecan pie, another glass or two of wine, and you're just like, I'll put everything away in a little bit. Well, that's the problem. If you cook your potatoes and leave them on the counter to cool, a harmful bacteria called botulism. Dun, dun, dun. The longer they sit without being put in the fridge, the higher the risk. So if you keep your taters after they've sat out for a while, the next day, they could kill you, or at least give you food poisoning. And you'll wish you were dead, quite frankly, if you have bad enough food poisoning. Yams and marshmallow casserole, same kind of thing. Can't leave them out too long. They start to develop bacteria. So you need to store them properly. Put them in and let them cool right away. Because we always, I'm one of those guys, I never put stuff away while it's hot. I think because I was always under the misconception that if you wrap something while it's hot, the steam is going to mess with it.
That's what I always thought, too. I know there are some things that you can't store. You have to
let
it cool down before you throw it in the fridge.
Right. So I just did that with everything. And then I just put it in. And I got to be honest, I've been eating Thanksgiving leftovers for a good number of years. I've been all right. But Listen, I like to spread the warning. It's a well-warned, well-armed information. I don't know. Starches and cooked vegetables are not freezer-friendly. Potatoes, pastas, other grains do not do well in the freezer, or cooked vegetables, same way, because the water inside of them begins to crystallize when it freezes, and it breaks down the cells of the food. So after thawing, the texture of the food gets super dry. Blech. Mushroom dishes that have been sitting out too long can cause illness. I just think mushrooms in general can cause illness. I'm not a mushroom guy. Do you like mushrooms? Not at all.
No.
Never have. If you sneak one in somewhere, I'm not the kind of guy who's going to pick through things.
Yeah, I'm not going to go out of my way to...
Right. But I'm not going to order them.
Not since college, anyway.
Oh, sure. Well, I don't know what you were doing with the mushrooms in college. Like potatoes, mushrooms can pose serious risk for foodborne illness. According to the European Food Information Council, and I always, when I have a question about that, about food safety, I eschew the CDC because, you know, they're part of the fake news. And then I go to the Independent and the European Food Information Council. Reheating a dish with mushrooms is not wise because fungi has certain proteins that can be infiltrated by bacteria and enzymes when not stored properly. And reheating at any temperature below 158 degrees will not kill the bacteria. Yikes. Don't recook your rice. That's going to lead to bacterial poisoning. Spinach can potentially contain carcinogens. Happy Thanksgiving, folks. Enjoy it. Ick. No, thank you. I read another one where if you eat leftovers for a week, that's bad. How long do you keep leftovers? I say a week.
Yeah, I mean, they'll...
You know when it's time.
Yeah, I give it a couple days before I'll willingly go back and eat them, but they usually end up sitting there around a week.
Yeah, I'll eat them for up to, you know, because sometimes you have more of one thing or another left over, and I'll leave stuff for a week. My wife starts to panic after like 3 days. We've got to throw this out. It's going to spoil. I go, it's been in the refrigerator. How could it spoil? That's me just, you know, pretending that I have knowledge of food and foodborne illnesses and just thumbing my nose at fear. So I just go with it. All right, so somebody sent me from foodsafety.gov, they sent me a link about the three ways to thaw a turkey. So refrigeration is the recommended way, and that's what I do. Okay, the method takes some time, so allow 1 day for each 4 to 5 pounds of weight. My turkey breast was 8.5 pounds, and again, it has been in the refrigerator since 8 o'clock Sunday morning. Something is wrong with this turkey, but it has not defrosted. If your turkey weighs 6 pounds, it'll take about 4 days to thaw. Once thawed, the turkey is safe for another 2 days. There you go. Cold water thawing. Leave the turkey in its original wrapping and submerge in a sink or container full of cold water. It's important that the water be cold so that the turkey stays at a safe temperature. Change the water every 30 minutes. This sounds labor intensive. Dan, what are you doing tomorrow? Want to come by the house, babysit a cooler?
Yeah, I'm not changing water.
Yeah, but I got a fridge full of beer. You can sit next to... I'll make it worth your while.
Mm.
There may be, you know... And in one of those beer bottles, there's a $100 bill. Not telling you which one.
I could do. You want that bird defrosted?
It's like Charlie at the Chocolate Factory. You know, it's like the golden ticket. In one of those bottles of beer, there's a golden ticket.
I will get to the bottom of every one.
I would hope you would. Let's see. You should change the water every 30 minutes. Empty out the water. Replace it with fresh cold water. With this method, allow 30 minutes of defrosting time per pound. All right. Microwave thawing. See. Oh, before you commit to thawing your, I had never heard about this. I'm seeing that a lot on social media now. You know, kids texting their dad, how do you microwave a turkey? Doesn't make sense.
I feel like you would need a huge microwave for that.
Yeah, I do not have that. All right. Yeah, you got to have one that will fit in your microwave. Minutes depend per pound and the power level used. General rule allows 6 minutes per pound when thawing a turkey in the microwave. Be sure to rotate it several times or even flip it. If the turkey starts to cook instead of just defrost, let it rest for 5 minutes. Oh, my goodness. That's too much. All right. Here is how not to thaw a turkey. I wish I was telling a hilarious anecdote, but it is a sad but true thing. My first apartment after college was in a tiny town in Sparta, Illinois, down in southern Illinois. And I had this little furnished apartment because I was working at this 1,200-watt radio station. do a morning. Yeah, man, rocking Sparta. And I was going to have some people over for dinner, so I had bought a roast. And I was going to, do this roast beef, make a nice dinner. And I had had the roast in my freezer, and I'd taken it out and put it in the refrigerator, and it was supposed to thaw, and it didn't. And so I joked earlier about defrosting something on the hood of my car. I took this roast out, and it was hot, and I set it on the hood of my car in the direct sunlight, and I thawed it that way. Now, thankfully, no one got sick, but as God is my witness, I thawed a roast on the hood of my car. it could have gone horribly wrong, and the entire staff could have been out, which would have, how could we have been the voice of Sparta if everybody was done? But it worked out. So I'm going to add that to the list. Don't thaw your turkey on the hood of your car. Learn from me. Thawing a turkey on the counter, in the garage, or on the back porch. Not supposed to do it that way. In the garage. I don't want to eat any food that's in the garage. I mean, if you have a fridge in the garage, that's one thing. But if it's just laying there, like, next to an old oil can and your bike, your tire pump, there's your lawnmower, snowblower. Oh, there's turkey. I know I left it out here somewhere. Where's my Thanksgiving dinner? Thawing a turkey in a brown paper grocery bag or plastic garbage bag. Maybe that's the problem. I left the turkey in the grocery bag. Maybe I need to take that out. All right, I'll do that. I mean, it's still in the refrigerator, so it's still... I don't think the wafer-thin bag from Jewel is going to hold in heat or hold in that much cold either. Don't use the dishwasher to thaw a turkey. I've never even heard of that. Any method that is not the refrigerator, cold water, or the microwave. Basically, if you're coming up with an ingenious way that we did not list, and it does not involve a refrigerator, cold water, or a microwave, then you are completely wrong, and you will probably catch some sort of horrible toxin. So do not poison your guests or yourself. So if your turkey's still icy on Thanksgiving morning, don't panic. It's impossible for me. I'm already panicked. And what's today? Wednesday? Thanksgiving's Thursday. I got a lot of time. I have all day Wednesday, and before I have to put it in the oven. I don't know. Don't panic. Perfectly safe to cook a turkey from the frozen state. It will just take longer. A solidly frozen turkey will take at least 50% longer than a thawed turkey. This is where Thanksgiving meals are tough because there's a lot of math involved. I got to take a turkey. How many pounds? And they're never exact. It's not like a straight up 8-pounder. It's like 8.37. Now I've got to do conversion. I got to get out a slide rule. Suddenly I'm doing ciphering like I'm Jethro Bodine dropping out of sixth grade. So 50% longer, that's half. That's half as much. You add on, or half, 100% plus half, 150%, which everybody says when an athlete says it, you can't give 150%. But you can when you're cooking a frozen turkey. If your turkey's only partially frozen, remember that it will take a bit longer to cook. Use your food thermometer, and when your bird measures 165 inside, the innermost part of the wing or the thickest part of the breast, it is ready. So thank you to the texter who sent that along to me. I appreciate that. Brian Noonan in for Nick on 720 WGN. Nick will be back on Monday. In just a few minutes, we're going to talk to Doug Cummings. He is a former deputy sheriff. He's also a radio and TV crime reporter. You heard him here on WGN for a long time. He's an author, and he also now presents workshops on personal safety and security management, focusing on houses of worship. It is getting to the point, and I don't mean to sound alarmist, where we touched on this yesterday. You don't feel safe anywhere. You really need to be aware of your environment more than we ever were before, and that doesn't mean you're paranoid. It just means in this day and age where we're having shootings seemingly every other week. It's only a matter of time, unfortunately, that's before it comes close to you, as we saw yesterday or two days ago when it happened in Mercy Hospital. So Doug is here. We're going to welcome him in now. Hi, Doug. Thanks for staying up this morning.
Hey, Brian. Good morning.
So first of all, for those of you who are saying that, Doug, What's the matter? We're getting some weird feedback. I'm gonna put you on hold for a second, Doug. Dan's gonna try to figure out what's going on.
I'm gonna call you back from a different line real quick.
Okay. Yeah. Is that the line? Are we always having it on line one? Is that where things are going crazy? All right. Dan's gonna call Doug back, and I'll give you a minute because you know Doug's name, you know Doug's voice, and not just from hearing him. He's been on with Nick a number of times, so you know Doug from there. But you will also know him more when he gets on to talk about it. I was mentioning this. We talked about it. I believe it was yesterday morning. How you kind of become immune to all these shootings because part of you thinks, oh, it's never going to affect me. Even though, and that's probably true. The chances are minimal that you are going to be involved in one of these incidents. However, everybody who has been involved in one of these incidents thought the exact same thing. And now we go places and we are constantly on the lookout. And it may not be the entire time you are there, but think about it. How many times have you walked into any public place now and for the first few seconds you're there, you scan the area like you never did before? You are paying more attention to where the exits are. You are paying more attention to how many people are around, what those people are doing. And then you go on about your business and you enjoy your meal or your shopping or your sporting event or your concert, whatever it is you're doing. But there's still that moment where you're paying that kind of attention. And then an incident like happened at Mercy Hospital the other day happens, and it's closer to home. And some people knew people who worked at Mercy Hospital or were patients at Mercy Hospital or are a police officer who responded to the call. And God forbid you're one of the families of the victims. Now it hits a little closer to home. And now, we need to pay a little bit more attention to what we're doing, and that's what Doug does, and that's what we're going to talk about. We've been having some. This has been strange. We have been having some goofy phone issues, and not with every caller, just with some callers. I thought it was just me hearing voices come back in my head, but I don't. It doesn't appear to be that. I love Dan because he is frantically working the phones now. I'm giving you this glimpse behind the curtain because I think it's always important to let you know what's going on. So now here's the other thing. If you have a question for Doug, if you have a question as we go through when we get Doug on, I wish you could see Dan. He is working so hard and he's trying every line, and we're trying to make this happen, and we will. So I don't know. It's Vic, when you're, and I hate to interrupt you, when you're covering this, does it ever get, Are you starting as a news person to become immune to this too, where it's like, oh, okay, it's another day, and you hate to say that because we shouldn't.
Not at all. It affects me just like it affects anybody else, and it's stressful. When you hear about, I was at home in my apartment when I have a thing. When I leave the newsroom, I don't check my phone for news apps like a lot of news people do.
Okay.
I go home and I decompress.
Yeah.
Okay. And I stay off social media as much as I can because it's out there as well. So I decompress. There's no news on in my apartment until around 2 hours before I have to come in, and then I absorb what I can to get caught up.
Sure.
But I was, and Jeannie knows that that's a rule, and so she's a news junkie, and so she'll be checking news all day. This one she told me about. There's been there's a shooter at Mercy, and I thought, what do you mean a shooter? She said there's an active shooter at Mercy Hospital, and I just thought, no, not at Mercy. It's
right.
That's close to home.
Not here. Yeah, exactly.
That certainly impacts me, yeah.
It's close to home, and while we cover any of these tragic events, and you guys in the newsroom do a great job, this one, it's literally right down the street. So, it's getting worse and worse. Well, I think we're going to try this again. Hi, Doug.
The tin cans have been strapped together.
Perfect.
With the string.
Thank you so much.
I think we're good.
Yes, we are good. There's no fifth and sixth voices coming through. So, welcome, Doug Cummings. For people who who people have heard you with Nick a number of times, and they're like, wait a minute, Doug Cummings, that name sounds so familiar. Did he used to be a reporter at WGN?
I think so.
Okay.
I seen that was another life, but I think so. Yeah.
Give us some of your backstory before we get into this the safety stuff that is going to scare everybody to death.
I started in radio when I was like 12 years old, but I in Chicago I was at the old WMAQ for about 10 years, and then I was at GN from 2000. In fact, I remember covering the 9/11.
Oh, geez.
Stuff in 2000 and then or 2000 and yeah, and then I was there till off and on till about 2008.
Holy cow! And then you had always wanted to be an author, and now you definitely are an author. How did you transition from writing novels, crime novels, to doing more personal safety stuff? Your latest book is Escaping the Ozone: Institution, Situational Awareness, and Staying Safe. How'd you make that transition?
Well, I think what happened was that the whole time, I mean, while I was a cop, I dealt with a lot of victims. While I was a reporter, I dealt with a lot of victims. I mean, in both businesses, you deal with people usually on the worst day of their life.
Right.
Because mostly all I covered was crime and disasters with a short stint in Springfield, which some people might say was the same thing. But I think that I got to the point of feeling very strongly for victims because I saw what they were going through. And I also saw that in a lot of cases, people didn't have to become victims if they had taken just a few steps. And not blaming. I don't ever blame victims.
Well, yeah, because that it could be seen as an inflammatory statement. I'll let you finish, and then we can go back to that.
Yeah, we are always, we are responsible for our own behavior.
Sure.
But there are times that we can't avoid being victimized.
Sure.
But there are sometimes steps that we can take that if we had taken them, through no fault of our own, but if we had taken certain steps, if we'd known to take them, we might have avoided the problem. And that's not in every case. Sometimes it comes on to the best of your ability. You're practicing good safety routines. But I saw a lot of that, and I saw a lot of people who were suffering badly. And I think that just, after a while, I just got to the point of saying, well, you know, let's write this and see what happens. And it seems to have helped some people.
Well, and that's it's hard because going back to what you said, we can't, people try to do the right thing involving their own safety. And now every company and every school is going through all these drills. You know, we have active shooter drills where we used to just have fire drills or tornado drills. So the training is there, and we hear about, run, hide, or fight. You know, everybody's indoctrinated with this kind of stuff. But as you said, sometimes, no matter how well you're trained, bad things are going to happen.
That's exactly right.
And it's a horrible thing. We saw that the other day. Now that since we had so much phone trouble, now we are up on the break. So I got to take a quick break. But then when we come back, I want to find out what the ozone is for everybody. Not the ozone in the sky, but the ozone is that you're talking about in your book, how we escape the ozone. And we'll get into some more safety issues and how things unfolded at Mercy Hospital the other day, and how, we need to, as you said, be responsible and take some steps to do the most that we can to keep ourselves as safe as we can. If you have a question for Doug, 312-981-7200. Doug Cummings is my guest. DougCummings.net is the website. We will talk more with Doug in just a minute. It is 720 WGN. All right. We got the phones all sorted out. And now we can really start talking to Doug Cummings. You remember Doug from here at WGN. He was a former sheriff's deputy, former reporter, TV and radio, and an author. His latest book, Escaping the Ozone, Intuition, Situational Awareness, and Staying Safe. What is the ozone, Doug?
The ozone is the oblivious zone, which is that place where we're not conscious of what's going on around us. It's the place where I would say most people are most of the time. Mm-hmm. They're either listening to something on their phone, which is very common, the headphones and all that, or just distracted by a conversation or distracted by life, what the thoughts are in their brain. And I would say that I spend time there, you spend time there, everybody does. It's the time that we're most comfortable, and we're just not paying attention.
Well, and you hear that again. Some of this is stuff that we've been pounding into people's heads forever. Why do you think people don't? We're starting to listen, but why do you think a lot of people still don't heed that advice? You see people walking around, as you mentioned. You see this, I think, is the worst offender. The earbuds in. People don't know who's coming up behind them. They don't know where they're going. They don't hear cars. What's it going to take to get some people to actually go, well, I should pay attention?
Well, I've got a funny, well, not so funny, but an amusing story, I guess, about that friend of mine in New York. Won't do it again because she was walking down the street. And apparently walking too slowly because somebody came up from behind, smacked her upside the head, and knocked her down.
Oh, jeez.
When she told me that story, she said, I just wasn't walking fast enough for him, I guess. And she also said that she would not walk with earbuds in her ears from then on. And I hadn't heard any injuries from her for some time, so I guess that's probably the case. But that's what can happen. You know, we've got five senses. Why block one of them?
Right.
And by blocking one of them, you usually block one or the other. If you're blocking what you can hear, you're probably blocking what you can see because you're not going to be distracted or you're not going to be attracted to whatever it is that, might, as you said, might be coming up behind you.
Well, and when we go, there's certain places up until recently, there's certain places we would go where you never figured that violence would happen, you know, and unfortunately it has in schools, churches, even now at a hospital. So how do we change people's perception? Because, you know, people going to church, they're not anticipating danger, so they're not hyper alert as they would be if they were walking down, you know, Michigan Avenue late at night. You know, that time you're going to be a little more wary. So how do we change people's perception of when they need to really step up their game?
I think institutions need to start talking about it more often, and I think we are. We heard through the reports coming out of the horrible situation yesterday that Mercy Hospital had just done active shooter intruder drills. Mm-hmm. Some hospitals do them routinely. Some businesses do them routinely. I know the churches that I've been dealing with, some of them do drills, some of them don't, some of them are getting ready to, but it often happens that, and nowadays particularly, it takes an incident like what happened the other day. I know when I started getting a lot of calls from houses of worship was after the horrible events in Texas last year.
Right.
You know, it takes that. It takes, and then you only have a window. I've found that you have a window of about 3 or 4 weeks before these institutions start closing their eyes again to it. So people wake up for a little bit to an incident of mass violence. They woke up after the Las Vegas shootings. They woke up after the church shootings. And, you know, then they very slowly go back to sleep. And you have to wait again until another incident. Or if you've already, in my case, if I've already gotten into a church and I'm talking to people, then sometimes the activity will continue and I'll be able to build a security team or at least some kind of a rapport enough with the church that they start developing some guidelines for how to react.
Well, and obviously, depending on the size of the building and the layout, things are going to be different. What are the common things that you talk about if you go into a house of worship and you're giving a workshop there about preparedness, or you're going into an office building, or you're going into a hospital? What are the common things that we should be looking for?
Well, what I say to churches, particularly to houses of worship, churches are known for being very welcoming places, yeah. And in a church, we welcome people in from the street, strangers we've never seen before. Then we turn our backs on them in most churches, we turn our backs on them while they come in. Most churches want to be thought of as a home, yet in our homes, we would never think about doing that to somebody and turning our backs to them as a stranger coming in off the street. So that's the first thing, is to start awareness and to start thinking in terms of it could happen here. It likely won't. Chances are very rare that you're going to have a mass shooting anywhere. But you will have things like disturbances. You'll have somebody who's in a house of worship. You may have somebody coming in looking for a handout. You may have people coming in who have serious mental problems, and they're looking for somebody to talk to. But they're one step away from going off and having a yelling fit. You may have people who truly need help, and you just want to segregate them from the rest of the population so that you can help them without disturbing what worship is going on. So I start trying to get the staff of a house of worship thinking in those terms. But in businesses, it's a little different. You may be able to put your guard up a little bit more in a business than you would in a church, because you don't necessarily need to be so welcoming.
Right.
You can keep an eye on people a little bit more carefully. So there are two different approaches to take. In hospital, it's much like churches. You're going to have people coming in off the street with different needs, and you can't close your doors to that. So you develop a security force, so that's helpful. You train your people that there are certain things to watch for, and they know, because they've been trained in the business, they know to look for people who are suffering. And you have drills. That's the main thing. And I tell people that no plan is great, no plan is really workable until you've drilled it and found out what the inconsistencies are.
Yeah.
So you have to practice whatever you're learning.
Well, I know schools are doing that more and more. I've gone through that with a number of classes in the schools. It's and we did here at WGN. We had one of those seminars where they talked about the active shooter. It was lumped in with fire drills and all the other stuff. But you're right. Businesses, because you can lock all the doors at businesses, as you mentioned. You don't have to let anybody in. A hospital, they let people in, and churches, they let people in. So you're opening yourself up. And do we want to get, or are we going to have to? Do you foresee, with all your experience, us becoming a society where everything is locked and there's no places?
I hope not. I hope that we develop into a society that's alert. Where people who are working the door or near the door of different institutions have more heads-up awareness of what's going on. You walk into a lot of places nowadays where somebody's sitting behind the security desk with their feet up reading a magazine. That's the kind of attitude I'd really like to change, and have people who are watchful and observing people who come in through the door and going through a set of a checklist, saying, all right, this person looks like he's okay. What's in his hands? Is he wearing a backpack? Is he looking around like he's checking the place out? I often say to people that if you want to evaluate somebody as to whether they have evil intent or not, remember what your kids were like when you knew that they were about to get in trouble. And that's kind of the same look. It's that furtive, looking over your shoulder, is there anybody watching me kind of attitude. And that's often what you'll find in somebody who's getting ready to commit a crime.
And that seems so simple, but it does make a lot of sense.
Well, they're doing what we train people to do, and that is be heads up and look around and see what's going on and be aware of your environment. So if you see somebody else doing that, they're either practicing good safety routines or they're about to commit a crime.
Now, when we after the news, Doug, I want to talk about some specifics as it relates to what happened at Mercy Hospital, and I've got some questions coming in from people, because we're telling everybody to be alert and we'll talk about situational awareness a little more, but you know, some people, one of the questions, and I'll give it to you and you can answer it after news. Somebody says, I need a walker to get around. How can I and others like me save ourselves in situations like this? So those are the kind of questions that we'll be talking about. If you have a question for Doug Cummings, 312-981-7200. That's the phone. That's the text number. We'll talk more with Doug on the other side. DougCummings.net is the website. His latest book, Escaping the Ozone into Intuition, Situational Awareness, and Staying Safe. More with Doug on the other side of the news. Thanks, Vic. Brian Noonan in for Nick D. Talking with Doug Cummings. Doug, a former sheriff's deputy, spent 30 years covering law enforcement as a radio and TV reporter, and he was here at WGN for a while, and for the past 10 years, he is an author. He has also, for the past 10 years, been presenting workshops on personal safety and security management, focusing on houses of worship. Doug, thanks for hanging on. Let's go back real quick to this question that I posed from one of the texters, and it's one of those things, because we talked about earlier being, you know, we're all responsible to a point for our own safety. You know, there's certain things that you just cannot avoid no matter how prepared you really are. And our texter said, I need a walker to get around. So how can I or others save ourselves? If you're in a house of worship, if you're going to the hospital, you know, there were innocent people around yesterday. Thank God more of them were not involved. But how does somebody who's, you know, it's easy to tell people who can move around pretty well that you got to do this and that. What about people who can't move around as well?
Well, I think one of the things that I would say would be what I'd tell anybody, and that is be heads up. Be looking around as much as you can. Mm-hmm. I see people using walkers who are not comfortable with using the device, so they're focused on the ground in front of them. Yes. As you would think you would be. But sometimes you have to pause for a moment and look around and see what's going on around you. That's one thing that you can do. I think having as much help as you can get around you is another good thing. Staying out of areas where you're by yourself. If you're transitioning from a car down the street to a building where you need to go, stay near a wall so that you have the opportunity, if you need to put your hand out on the wall, look up, and see what's going on around you. It's a tough situation because both hands are usually occupied.
Right.
If you can carry something, I know some walkers are built so that you have a little pouch or somewhere where you can carry things.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe what you want to do is carry something that is either a noise-making device or even some a personal defense spray, something like pepper spray,
yeah,
which you have to be careful, obviously, in using. But it depends on how debilitated you are in using that walker. And most of the folks that I know who use walkers are pretty spry, and they're not limited in the fact that they are in their ability to be heads up and looking around. And that's the main thing, is to see what's coming at you before it reaches you.
Now, part of the title of the book again, Escaping the Ozone: Intuition, Situational Awareness, and Staying Safe. How much are you? Everybody has, I have that little voice in my head, or my spidey sense, or I just had a gut feeling. Huh. How much does intuition really play a part in our safety, keeping us safe?
Well, it really does, because most people will, as you say, you're going to have a little bit of a warning, that little niggling feeling in the back of your head that something's wrong. I told a group the other day that even if you're not a trained professional, you know to listen, you can listen to your intuition. And once you start listening to that, once you start developing that, you're going to see a lot more that's going on around you. But really what you need to do is develop it by looking and adding to that what you're hearing and what you're feeling by what you're seeing. I liken it to driving down the street. When we're driving, we're not consciously looking at other drivers. We're not consciously looking at the street, but we are watching. And hopefully we're very aware of peripheral vision, what we're seeing coming off the sidewalk, other cars that are coming at us. There are a lot of things that we're aware of when we're driving that we don't think about necessarily. But that's what I want people to do when they're out walking. I want them to see what's going on around them. I want them to be aware of movement, people moving up next to them. I want them to see what's coming up ahead of them. I want them to be careful in certain neighborhoods. I want them to be careful not to go into certain neighborhoods. But it's a thought process that helps with the intuition. If you're watching, you're going to see a lot more, obviously, as yeah. I think as somebody once said.
Yeah, you got to be paying attention. I yelled at my daughter about this all the time. Not yell at her, but I really stress it to her because she lives in New York City now, and she's taking the subway, and she's walking around. And I would say the same thing. She went to school in New Orleans. I said the same thing when she was living here at home. You got to know what's going on. You have to, you know, you don't want people to live in fear, but it's not fear. It's would you call it a hyper alertness? Would you just call it what would a good term be? So you're not trying to scare people. You just want them to know this is how we have to live now. Observant.
There are certain places you're observing, but there are certain places where you're alert. There are certain places where you're hyper alert. I try to play a game when I go into a densely packed area, and I can imagine where she's walking sometimes in New York and in Chicago too. I keep my head up. I keep moving my head side to side. We call keeping it on a swivel.
Yep.
And I look at people coming at me, and I try to think, I'm meeting somebody here. I'm looking for a friend. And that's the attitude to have. You're up, you're looking, and you're looking at people. You're looking at what they're doing. But it's as though you're going into a crowd expecting to find a friend, as though you're looking for a friend. And that'll keep you alert. It's kind of a game I play, and I tend to watch people's hands. I tend to watch their movements, what they're wearing, what their eyes are telling me, what their affect is telling me. And you can often tell.
What do you mean by that? Explain that part.
Affect is the way somebody looks and the way they're acting. What their face is telling me. Are they angry? And are they getting ready to punch somebody out? And that's something worthy of watching. It's little things like that that can trip your senses and keep you alert when you're in a crowd or when you're walking down the street.
All right, let's look a little bit at the tragedy at Mercy Hospital. It's most of the time, or a lot of the times in these attacks, we don't really know what the motive is afterwards, and the police look for motives up and down. This time, we know part of what the motive is, or at least the main motivation was a domestic situation. There was a problem between the murderer and one of the victims, the doctor. They had broken off an engagement. There had been some reports of abuse, domestic things. When somebody is in that situation, and their personal life is going to carry over into their professional life, whether they want it to or not, and I'm sure that, you know, this doctor doesn't want this guy showing up at work, but it does. How does somebody in a victim of that protect themselves? Other than, you know, can you immediately go to the police? What do you do if you're having trouble at home and you think this could escalate and carry over into the workplace?
Well, obviously, if you're in immediate danger or you've been injured by your abuser or anticipate that you're going to be immediately injured, you call 911. There's no hesitation. In fact, I always recommend that anybody in an abusive relationship, if they haven't developed that relationship where they always have the phone handy, as most people do nowadays, I know mine seems to be glued to my hand, as most of my friends would tell you, but anybody who is in an abusive relationship should always have a phone handy. But sometimes the violence starts with little things, and I want to go back to that because I've talked to a lot of people who say that, you know, in passing conversation, they'll say, oh, my boyfriend has started to, he'll pinch me, or he's, you know, if he's mad at me, oh, he'll just, you know, slap me on the side of the head. Well, that's not acceptable behavior in any relationship.
No.
You know, the TV show NCIS, the Gibbs slap, you know, if somebody did that to me in a relationship, it wouldn't be an acceptable thing for them to do, even if it's a friendly kind of thing. So I think sometimes that violence starts with those little things, the pushing and shoving, the pinching, along with verbal abuse. And what happens there is that victims oftentimes are left confused. They don't know what to expect from their partner. Especially if the physical stuff is intermittent and then followed by an apology and promises that it'll never happen again.
And so you mentioned
that may not rise to the level of calling the police.
That's what I was going to ask. So if it doesn't, then what do we do?
Well, don't assume that it's going to stop. That's the first thing.
Right.
Or that the good person that you once knew your abuser to be is going to magically reappear and be that perfect, loving person again. Chances are they won't. If they've started abusing you, the chances are that they'll continue because that's a chronic condition for them. And we won't go into all the background of why people abuse. But and if they start getting physical, it's just going to get worse. Violence actually often escalates when a relationship ends or when the abuser feels like the relationship is about to end. And is trying to actually get away from the person who's abusing them. You know, it's one of the things that I said today, I was talking to some folks at Channel 9, and I stressed the fact that it may well be humiliating and embarrassing to say, my boyfriend is abusing me, my spouse is abusing me, and that kind of thing is horrible because you don't want to admit that. How about seniors that are being abused by their kids? And that is an increasing problem we're finding out about, or being abused in a nursing home. It's very common, and this kind of thing is something that people don't like to talk about. It's a dirty thing.
With that being the case, Doug, and you hear that all the time, you're exactly right. Victims of abuse, they have shame, so they don't want to tell anybody.
Right.
So maybe it hasn't escalated to call 911 yet, but things are not going well. When do you go to somebody at work, HR, or your boss, and say, listen, you have to put that shame and that embarrassment aside, which you shouldn't have anyway, but we know people do, and say, listen, this is what's going on at home. This person could be dangerous. You know, you don't want to be alarmist, but you also, when do you give somebody at work a heads up that this could transition from home to work?
Well, I say talk to somebody you trust first, and I don't know about you, but very few people that I know trust HR.
Right.
Unless they have a personal friend.
I don't even know if we have HR, quite frankly, here.
Oh, yeah. There's absolutely there is. Yes, yes, there is. I remember that from 10 years ago.
Ah, okay.
But I think the best thing to say to somebody is talk to a friend, whether they're in that work environment or whether they're just a friend. The best thing you can do is bring somebody else into your orbit and say, look, I've got this problem. I don't know what to do. What should I do? From there, you may be able to develop the courage to go to work and say to another trusted friend at work, and I wouldn't necessarily, unless you have a good relationship with your boss,
right?
I don't know that I would feel compelled to go to my boss. I would talk to somebody who I talk to every day, some friend that can be kind of an intermediary. And you can kind of develop a strategy on how to approach the boss. But I think at some point when the threats are starting, when you are getting that feeling, or maybe it's just a niggling feeling in the back of your head that something's going to get bad, but normally when you're reaching the level of telling your employer, it's gotten pretty serious.
Right.
And the slapping has become much more pronounced. You're getting pushed into a wall, and maybe the slapping is a little harder. Maybe it's turned into punching. Maybe you have some bruises.
Well, what about when you've ended the relationship?
You've got to think about yourself.
You've ended the relationship, like it appears had happened here, but you know this the other person, the person who's been dumped, has a propensity for violence, or you suspect that they could. Do you just you're trying to keep yourself safe, but this person knows your routine. They know where you work. They know what time you go in, what time you get off. How do you not only keep yourself safe, but at that point, do you have, should you talk to somebody then and say, you know, this is what happens? Not that you have a responsibility to keep anyone other than yourself safe, but if you think there might be an issue and you've already talked to the authorities, do the authorities usually approach the workplace, or what happens then?
I wouldn't count on the authorities speaking out on your behalf in that way. And I think if it's gotten to that level, yes, you do have a responsibility to the folks at work, because you have to think in terms of what could happen if this abuser comes to work and if nothing else creates a scene.
Yeah.
But which is maybe the most likely thing and hopefully the most likely thing
that's going to happen.
Right.
But if you're starting to think that this could impede in my work environment or occur in my work environment, at that point, that's when you have to take steps. And I think that you'll find in most cases, there are some times that it's not going to be accepted at all. But if you work in a company where there is a security department, for example,
mm-hmm.
that's going to be the easiest thing. And they're going to be set up to deal with things like that.
Yeah.
But you want to be able to trust the person, first of all, that you're talking to, and then you want to tell them completely what's going on, and maybe you want to bring in reports from the police and say, look, I've had to file this against this guy or this woman. You should know about it, and you should know what's happening. But at that time, hopefully, you're going to trigger a response that's going to help you rather than hinder you. I found in cases like that where, you can take a problem like that to the workplace and actually get some help, either from friends or, as I said, from a security department or from your employer himself.
All right, we got to take a quick break, but we've got Elizabeth wants to jump on with a question or a comment, and then we want to talk about what happens if you're just nearby, if you were in the lobby of Mercy Hospital yesterday and this incident starts, or if you're at church and this starts, or at school, how do you keep yourself safe? Doug Cummings is my guest. DougCummings.net is the website. The latest book, Escaping the Ozone, Intuition, Situational Awareness, and Staying Safe. We will talk more with Doug in just a minute on WGN. Talking with Doug Cummings about personal safety when we are in environments that we are not always in control of. Elizabeth has been holding on. She wants to talk to Doug and share a story. Hello, Elizabeth.
Hi, Brian. I'm reliving the whole thing again. When I heard this Mercy Hospital thing, I thought, oh, God, that was us a year ago. I was taken in to McNeil Hospital, which is only 6 minutes away,
right,
with a heart attack. And I had just had 2 stents put in, and I'm laying there in the bed. They told me, don't move for 6 hours.
Right.
And I said, leave the door open because I'm claustrophobic. So they did. All of a sudden, this one nurse comes in and closes the door. I said, no, don't do that. She said, I have to. I got very quiet. I said, what's the matter? She said, I broke up with him 4 months ago, and he's been following me everywhere. I thought, oh, my God. I said, did you talk to him or his family? She said, yeah, I've been thinking of getting a restraining order, but I don't want to make him angry. The first thing out of my mouth was, get a pistol, learn how to use it and carry it. And I thought, please, God, let me get out of this thing. She opens the door.
Uh-huh.
And here, this handsome, good-looking, tall fireman with his boots on and his braces turns around and says, there you are. I thought, oh, my God, he has easy access.
Yeah. So what ended
up
happening?
What do you do in a case like that?
That's a good question, Elizabeth. Thanks very much. So what do you do in a situation like that, Doug, when somebody who could be the threat has, nobody at a hospital is going to stop a firefighter as they're walking in, or a police officer, or somebody who looks like, it looks like they're supposed to be there doing their work. In a hospital, everybody looks like they're supposed to be there.
It sounds like a horror movie of sorts, doesn't it?
It does.
And your back is against the wall and you're not really sure what to do. I'm going to be making as much noise as I possibly can.
Okay.
I'm going to be agitating. I'm going to be screaming if I can. I'm going to try and attract as much attention as I can. And I'm hoping that in a situation like that, that the young lady would step in also and talk about and make some noise. You've got a phone right there. You may have a call button if you're in a hospital. Hit that call button. And make it very clear that you don't want to be around either of those people.
Right. Now, what if we're in the lobby? Because we only have a couple more minutes, and I think this is a question that we all need. What do we do if we're in a situation where something like this happens? So you were out in the parking lot yesterday, or you were in the lobby, and you hear the shots, and you know these are close. you know, we all know the run, hide, or fight. But what do you do if you're not in the immediate vicinity, but you might be? How do you keep yourself safe? What are we supposed to do?
Let me offer one thing before we transition away from domestic abuse, because I think this is a really important thing to note.
Okay.
Here's a hotline. There's a national hotline that you can call. It's 800-799-7233 or 799-SAFE. If you feel like you are in an abusive situation, if you need advice, whatever level it's at, if he just started shaming you and started picking on you, if you've gotten to the point where he's actually acting out against you, that's a number you can call, 800-799-7233. And in public, I think the one thing that I always say is that you've got to keep your head up. You've got to know what's going on. You've got to make sure that if you hear noises that are a little suspicious and you wonder if there's something going on, it probably is. If you're suspicious, there's reason to be investigating further. Always know your environment. Always know, know where your exits are if you're in a building. If you're outside, know where you can go for cover. And just be aware of that. You don't have to necessarily walk as though you're expecting danger, but just be aware of what's around you. If you can duck into an alley, if you can get down behind a concrete bus bench or something like that, okay. Know where you can go. And get inside as quickly as you can if you're outside. Get behind a protective barrier of some kind, but the best thing to do would be to get inside into a secure environment. But the most important thing that I can say is just be aware of your surroundings.
Yeah.
And if you hear something that sounds funky to you, then act on it. Don't just poo-poo your instincts, because your instincts are going to help you in a situation like that.
Well, again, you go back to the title of the book. You've got to avoid the ozone, the zone where we're all just kind of wandering through life. Pay attention to your intuition. The book by Doug Cummings, Escaping the Ozone, Intuition, Situational Awareness, and Staying Safe. You can get it at Amazon or wherever fine books are sold. DougCummings.net is the website. Pick up all Doug's books. It was great finally talking to you myself, Doug. I look forward to talking to you again soon. Have a great Thanksgiving.
Thank you, Brian. You too.
Take care. All right. On the other side of the news, we will get into so much more. But coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. Here we go. Well, after three, thank you, Vic. Getting ready with more. Man, there was coverage in the news about thawing turkeys. We've started it all off, and it's funny. I heard you say that, Vic, about the not rinsing the turkey. I read that today too. People think, oh, I'm supposed to rinse off the turkey. No, you're not.
I did not know that.
I didn't either until I read it today.
So you just throw it in without rinsing it. That's what.
Yeah, because they say if you rinse it off, the bacteria water is going to splash all over your kitchen. I don't know how messy you are.
Now, what about things like, I mean, I cook chicken breasts all the time, and I always rinse them.
I wonder
if I'm supposed to not rinse them.
I don't think I rinse them. I trim them, and
then I
cook them. Or marinate them. I figure the marinade's going to...
Mm-hmm.
I'm always of the mindset that enough heat's going to kill pretty much anything.
It should, right?
That's what I hope. I'll let you know if I'm, if I'm mistaken.
We've made it this far. I guess
that's the thing. You know, you look back, and I don't ever want to sound like the old man. Back in my day, we ate with dirty heads, and everything was filthy and full of bacteria. I don't ever want to sound like that. But there's some legitimacy to that line of thinking where, well, I've always defrosted things. Like, I always defrosted meat on the counter. Always. I always have. I probably always will. Except for the turkey, which I'm doing in the refrigerator, and it's not paying off. Because, see, I try to follow your rules, institutional meat thawing people, and it doesn't work. So, do I have to go back to my old ways? But there's certain things we've always done, and you go, okay, I don't know. Maybe I did get sick and didn't know it, or... You know, maybe somebody else got sick.
And, you know, we had the caller or the texter earlier who said, hey, he got sick. I think it was in regards to thawing the...
Yeah, but then he texted back. It was a joke because his wife made him get in a tub with the turkey or whatever.
Okay.
So he was, yeah.
What I was going to say was, we made it this far, right? But
yes.
There are other people who did get sick because when you're not following, I think, this is my opinion, when you're not following the safety rules in the kitchen, right, you're mm-hmm. kind of playing Russian roulette. Because if you do get a piece of meat, I would think that that has E. coli or
right.
Or something, maybe salmonella, and you are not following the rules, that's the one time you might get a little tummy ache, right?
Yeah, and I try to, you know, I try to keep separate cutting boards. Or if I do happen to, I'm not going to cut, trim chicken on the board and then immediately put vegetables on it. I'll, you know, use hot soapy water and get it all cleaned off or try to use separate cutting boards. So I try my best. But, you know, when it comes to defrosting hamburger, I'll still put it on the counter, you know, then get yelled at by my wife, but which she probably should do. So, okay, yeah, don't rinse your turkey. You heard it from Vic. Vic's a trusted newsman. If I tell you, check a couple more sources. Figure Vic has sourced this out already. So, you know, he tells you something, you can believe it. It's not fake news. Am I right on that? It's not fake news.
Well, no, it's from the state, you know. So if you trust the state officials, it's the Department of Public Health.
Well, here we go. Now, you know.
And she went on record. She gave us her name, you know. Jennifer Layden, not Vic Vaughn.
I'm Jennifer Layden.
I'm the conduit.
Works for the government, huh? The nanny state? Uh-huh, is that what we're supposed to believe? That she's taking care of us?
She's hard at work looking up these rules to pass on.
Oh, my goodness. Well, that's, I'm wondering how many people now are going to, you know, the news is reporting that there's this outbreak for romaine lettuce. Are people who don't believe the news going to just eat salad now? Is that how we're going to move on? Everybody's going to, well, it must be fake news.
I tend to believe that's been going on a while with the romaine lettuce.
Yeah, romaine is getting, I don't know what's going on with romaine lettuce lately. The last 6 months.
Some of the places it comes from, it may be using certain types of fertilizer that are cheaper because, but they're not necessarily healthy for us.
Well, that's not good. All right, since we're back, it's all bacteria all the time on the big show tonight.
What did I say? 4 hours of food poisoning.
4 hours, yeah. Listen, last night everybody was complaining, you're making me hungry. Stop talking about these delicious sandwiches. Well, yeah, now we went 180 on you today. We heard your concerns, listening audience. You didn't want us to talk about delicious food. Well, this is what you get. Now you get food poisoning. Kathy wants to jump in. Hi, Kathy.
Okay, so now I'm confused. I was listening earlier, and it made me think, don't take any leftovers home, period. But now you're saying a minute ago, as long as you heat it up high enough, the bacteria will be killed. Now, you may dry out everything, but you'll be safe. So now,
I never said you'd be safe. And two, I am going to preface everything I say by, I am not an expert. So if you listen to me and you say, well, listen, Brian Noonan gave me health advice, and I have followed it to the letter, you'll be signing your death warrant, quite frankly.
Okay. All right.
But here's the thing.
What am I supposed to do? Okay.
Well, here's what you do. When you finish your Thanksgiving dinner, wherever you're at, figure out what you want to take home and quickly put it in the refrigerator. Then you're fine. It's cold. You know, you'll leave that house. It's still cold. Put it in the trunk of your car. It'll be cold in the trunk of your car. You get it home, you put it right in the fridge. The next day, you get it out, you heat it up, you should be fine. You got to heat up the potatoes. You know, do what you always did.
And Brian, if I can quote the state's chief medical officer again, she says, and this is the thing, when you're having a Thanksgiving layout, some of that stuff tends to stay out for more than 2 hours, but she recommends put it in the fridge within 2 hours, and if you're going to eat it within 3 to 4 days.
There you go. Kathy, no need to panic. Okay. Don't turn this into, don't become a, you know, a snowflake.
Don't
worry
it.
About, yeah, don't overthink it. Have some leftover turkey, throw a little mashed potatoes, some stuffing on the plate, zap it up. You'll be fine. You know what's going to kill you? The microwaves. That's what's going to kill you. Put on a foil hat, cook your dinner, you'll be fine. And if you're not, again, I put all disclaimers that none of my advice should be followed.
Okay, I appreciate all this. Thank you.
You're
for
welcome,
me
Kathy.
Out.
Have a great Thanksgiving. Good luck.
Okay, you too. Bye.
Yeah, listen, we're spreading those seeds of discontent. So I want everybody panicked on Thursday night. Would you like some leftovers? Are you trying to kill me, Mom? Turns into a whole big thing. Families torn asunder. I was listening to Brian Noonan the other night, and he and Vic were talking about, you know, how leftovers will kill you, and if you should scrub a turkey before you cook it or after you cook it, and there was some shill from the state who was giving advice. Just unbelievable. Listen, if you're older than one, you've been doing this Thanksgiving thing for a while. Catherine wants to. Oh, Catherine's going to take issue with the state. This is when we fight back. This is how you stand up against the man. Hi, Catherine.
Hi, Kai. With my turkey, I just take a little dab of Dawn dishwashing liquid and wash my turkey. And then when I'm finished patting it dry and everything, I'll clean my sink out with Dawn because it's a good bacteria killer.
Okay, so you're scrubbing the turkey down with dishwashing
soap. I love it. I also do.
I don't use a whole lot. I, you know, just
a little bit, just enough
to lather it.
Well, sure. There's nothing wrong with lathering your turkey, and I don't think that's
really?
Sure. Who doesn't?
But then it rinse it real well, and the bacteria's gone. And I haven't had a problem in years.
And you're like 23 or 24, so you've had a couple Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
A couple, very good. All right, well, listen, that's another good tip. Thank you, Catherine. Happy Thanksgiving.
You're welcome.
All right, so I don't know. Now, what would your, you said you use dishwashing detergent as well, Vic?
I've never used it to wash meat, but I, if I'm going to eat an apple, we have a little handle that's got a scrubber on the end of it. It's got soap in the handle.
Okay.
I'll wash my apples with that, and it drives Jeannie nuts, so I do it when she's not looking. But, I wash my, I figure clean it off with some soap. It can't hurt, and then rinse it really well.
Yeah. See, I get, like, with apples, I just rinse them. And I know people, you're an idiot. Yeah, probably. But I'd rinse them off. Maybe I'll try the soap thing. Dan, what do? You just eat it right off the tree. You don't even care. You spray it with extra fertilizer.
No,
it gives it more fiber that
way.
Oh,
yeah. No, I always understood. I always thought it was the most important thing was like the physical act of rinsing it off. Like that takes care of most of, for produce, like fruits and vegetables.
How dirty is your produce? Where are you getting your produce that it's caked with gunk? You know?
With lettuce and sprouts and stuff that you hear getting recalled all the time, that's the stuff that's less likely to rinse it off depth enough to kind of kill fertilizer or human, whatever else is on
it. Let me ask you gentlemen this then. Because today, as I mentioned in the beginning of the show, I bought a couple bags of salad. When you buy the bagged salad, you don't rinse that off, do you? You just open it up and start eating it. It's supposed to be ready to go.
Yeah, if it says, some of them say rinsed 3 times. I love those.
Sure, but rinsed in what? I don't know what they're rinsing it in. Could be
ammonia
some farm worker's sweat. That doesn't sound tasty at all. But yeah, I've never rinsed those. And back when I used to buy heads of lettuce, back in like 1947, when I still did that, you'd peel off like the first 4 layers. And I figure at that point, all the fertilizer is on the first couple layers. By the time I get to the heart of the head of iceberg lettuce, the least tasty of all lettuces, I'd be safe. Boy, I never thought of myself as a guy who lived on the edge, but after this conversation, I am a dangerous character. I've flaunted death for lo these many decades. Does it make you look at me differently, Dan, when you know what a dangerous guy I am, that I don't fear bacteria?
A little intimidated now.
Yeah, sure. Well, listen, I always figure if it's microscopic, if something microscopic can kill a guy my size, more power to it. Bring it. Because, if you were getting in a fight with somebody with that much of a size difference, you'd always bet on the bigger guy. But now we're betting on these bacteria. I don't know. All right. I hope I haven't panicked you enough. I will talk to you Sunday. So I'll be here. Well, no, I'll actually, depending. This is strange. Northwestern's in a basketball tournament. So I may be with you again, not only Friday morning here for Nick, but Friday afternoon for Roe. But I may not be, depending on, I don't know if Northwestern, I don't know. In one scenario, they win, and I'm either on or off, and then if they lose, I don't know. But either way, the point of that convoluted tale of the schedule is I will have eaten some leftovers by that time. And then I will tell you how I fared, and we can share stories and see, you know, how you fared as well. Can we just cook the bird in the bathtub and kill two birds with one stone? You could, but then where are you going to make your gin? I'm busy running a distillery out of my bathroom, and I'm making plum wine in the toilet like I was in the joint. So I don't have any room in the bathroom to cook the turkey. The turkey has to be cooked somewhere else. I'm sorry about that, but, everybody's got a suggestion. Somebody from the 815, very disappointed. Now they're just going to order pizza for Thanksgiving. We have turned them off the entire Thanksgiving feast, which was not my intention. Might have been Vicks. He was the one reporting all the state-run government news about not rinsing your turkey off. Let's turn to something more pleasant on Thanksgiving. We're going to take a quick break, and then we will talk about some things that you never knew about the Macy's Thanksgiving Parade. We'll do that on WGN. Wow. Like this. Who's this?
It's a group called Clips.
Ooh.
Right. Jared Payton turned me on to them.
Really?
Yeah.
Clips. Very nice. All right. This is bad radio, but I'm seeing the most disgusting thing. Somebody is stomping sweet potatoes with their feet. It's on one of these talk shows. Okay. I'm sorry. I was just pulled away. And since we've been talking about disgusting food. Oh, and I also misspoke, so I want to correct myself. I said I flaunted death. That is not correct. I flouted death from the 630 correcting me, and I always appreciate it. Sometimes, at the wee hours, my mind works a lot faster.
That would be like
mouth.
That'd be if you died and you were, like, proud of it.
Yeah. Ha-ha! I'm dead! What do you think of that? Flaunting my death, which would be hard because I would, of course, be dead. I love two things. No, I love more than that, but I love on Thanksgiving getting up in the morning, and I'm a sucker for the Macy's Parade. I don't know why, but I am. I like that, and then I usually watch the dog show. This Thanksgiving, I will do neither, because I will be asleep. But I love the parade. And I've gotten to the point now where I started thinking, with our daughter in New York, maybe next year we'll go for Thanksgiving and we'll go to the parade. Because when I moved her out there, we went by Herald Square and saw the gigantic Macy's, which is a city block. It's crazy. And I thought, wouldn't it be fun to go to the parade? And then I thought to myself, boy, that's the dumbest idea you've ever had. And you've had a number of dumb ideas. Because except for a Mardi Gras parade, I don't like parades. And I detest crowds. So going to New York to watch a parade seems like the worst thing. And I haven't even gone to our Chicago Thanksgiving parade, which has turned out to be, has grown and grown. And I love it. And I always, every year, I think to myself, I want to be one of the guys who holds the balloons. If you ever have one of those, it's like a bucket list thing that I want to be in the Chicago parade, and I want to help guide one of the giant balloons down the street. I don't know why. I just think that would be cool. It's probably one of those things that on paper seems terrific, and in reality, I would be about two blocks into the parade, wishing that a sniper would take me out. Because I just see, as I'm there with however many people have to carry the balloon, and, it's windy, and now it's cold, and the marching band up ahead of us, the sousaphone player lost his shoe, so everything comes to a stop, and now it's stretched on, and as we go into mile two, I'm still trying to hold underdog. It's just, maybe it's one of those things, and you may have had one of these in your life, where it's better to just keep dreaming about it, It's like the old sayings, never meet your heroes. Maybe never become that balloon wrangler. But I don't know. It might be. But anyway, so I watched the parade, then we watched the dog show, and that's usually the thing. But I saw this today, and I was like, oh, I don't know any of these things. 20 things you never knew about the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. And we'll get we have time to get to a couple, and then we'll continue after. And also, I'm going to throw this out there, because I just mentioned that I've always thought I wanted to do the balloon wrangling. I don't know if that's the actual term, but it sounds like a good title. Doesn't that, rather than, I hold the rope on Felix the Cat, that's balloon wrangler. That makes me sound like I'd be wearing chaps and a hat. And perhaps I would spit into a spittoon when I was done wrangling the balloon. I'll go with that. But if you've done something like that, if there was something you always wanted to do and you finally did it live up to the picture that you had in your mind about the potential experience? Or did it turn out like I described where, oh boy, I finally did it and about halfway through I went, this is not for me. But let's start with a couple of these things you may not know about the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. The real reason for the debut in 1924 was to celebrate the expansion of Macy's flagship store into what the company then claimed was the world's largest store. The Manhattan Herald Square store occupied 1 million square feet and spanned a full block along 34th Street, hence Miracle on 34th Street, from Broadway to 7th Avenue. So that was the true motive for the parade. The Christmas commencement. Now, did you know that the parade first launched as the Macy's Christmas Parade? The original march featured live animals and floats that coordinated with the nursery rhyme theme of Macy's Christmas window display, whether it was Little Red Riding Hood, the old woman who lived in a shoe, Little Miss Muffet, etc. Tony wants to jump in. Tony, you like the parade as well?
Oh, Brian, I love the parade. And I love it so much I had to go and see it live and in person.
How'd that work out?
So what I did, it was perfect. I stayed in Times Square, and I made sure I got a room. We were like on sixth floor or something like that.
Okay.
So we could see it from above and below. And the balloons were like just above us.
Oh, nice.
And I got to watch, and then I watched it on TV. So I watched it out the window, and I opened up the window so I could get the ambiance of people yelling and everything else and the music, and I watched it on TV.
Well, that's perfect. That's perfect. Now, how far in advance did you book your room?
Well, I booked it close to a year,
okay.
But I'll tell you right now, they suck it to you.
Oh, sure they do.
I paid like $600 a night.
Whoa.
For Wednesday night and Thursday night to stay in Times Square.
Oh, sure, because they know that's, they got all the yokels coming in. All of us from other places going to come in, and everything's expensive in Manhattan to begin with.
Oh, I didn't expect.
So it was worth it.
I think it was worth every penny. I mean, like, just the hotel, I spent over almost $2,000, but it was worth it.
But it was worth it. Just, well, see, then sometimes if you have the money, you got to spend it for an experience like that. Tony, all right, maybe you're convincing me a little bit. We'll see. Tony, I'm glad you called. Thank you for the story, and happy Thanksgiving.
Thanks. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye. All right, let's do a little news, and then we'll continue with some of the other things that you may not know about the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. And then, I am never a fan of zero tolerance. We'll get to that after 4 o'clock. Before America blasts off to Mars, will we be doing it for science or something else? It's tonight's cover story on WGN-TV News at 9. Brian Noonan in for Nick. We're talking about the Macy's Thanksgiving Parade. It is a tradition in our house, and I'm sure your house as well. From the 847, I prefer the Rose Parade from Pasadena on New Year's Day. No show tune stuff, just lovely flower floats, marching bands, and horses. I don't mind the big Broadway show tunes. I mean, it's New York, so you've got a, Broadway is a huge part of that city, and Herald Square not far from Broadway, so I don't mind the little show tunes. I like the Rose Parade as well. Again, even when we lived out in California, every year I said, oh, we should go to the Rose Parade, because you can... you could go and stand along the street, but people would camp out there for days, trying to get their spot on the street. And then if you wanted to buy a spot in the stands, it cost a fortune, but you got a box lunch. I was like, oh, man, a box lunch for $300. That sounds fantastic. I can't make a ham sandwich for that kind of money at home. That might be a good deal. But I don't, it's beautiful. And the weather's always better at the Rose Parade than it is a lot of time for the Macy's parade, and they're saying this year it could be really rough So the balloon wranglers are going to have a lot of trouble. So these are some things you never knew about the Macy's Parade. And back to my original question, feel free to jump in, 312-981-7200, because I mentioned I always wanted to hold the ropes for the balloons. Is there something that you have that you always wanted to do, and then you finally did it? A, did it turn out as wonderfully as you had always imagined it would? Or B, was it, I should have left that in my dreams? Because it didn't quite live up to the expectation. All right, maneuvering down Main Street, extending 6 miles and 111 blocks, the original parade route was so long that the floats had to be hitched to horses and led down the streets on hoof. The route has since been condensed to a manageable 2.5 miles, and the floats are towed by motorists. There were protests against the parade originally. 2 years after the parade started, it drew the ire from the Allied Patriotic Societies, who called for its cancellation on the grounds that it would prevent churchgoers from participating in Thanksgiving Day worship. But Macy's assured people that, no, there'd be plenty of time to go to church after the parade was over. Since 1969, the artistic floats and balloons have appeared in the parade have been designed by a talented group of makers called the Balloonatics. That was your softball team, wasn't it, Dan? The Balloonatics? That's what I thought. A fun-sized float. It wouldn't be feasible to fly massive parade floats across the Hudson River to Manhattan from Macy's Parade Studio. Segments of each finished float are packed into a 12-by-8-foot box and shipped through the Lincoln Tunnel to the parade staging area, and then they are reassembled. Sounds like a lot of work. All right, not since 1971 has the wind downed a balloon during the parade. From time to time, gusting winds have led balloons to strike lampposts and injure passersby. This is why every balloon has a crew of handlers. All right, so it's a handler, not a wrangler. Handler walking beneath it and a pilot who walks ahead of it. The pilot monitors the wind and can issue orders to the handlers to control the balloon. All right, this is why I know I can never do this. I can never fulfill my bucket list in the Macy's Parade, Dan, because in order to be a pilot for the balloon, well, this is the pilot, not the handler, so I could probably still be a handler. But the pilot, they have training 3 times a year. You have to be able to walk the length of the parade backwards, 2.5 miles, walking backwards without getting lost. There, I can't walk backwards from where I'm sitting now to the door without getting lost. And that's got to be, what, 15 feet tops? Never, not good. First balloon, any idea? First balloon in the Macy's Parade? It was Felix the Cat. Balloons replaced live animals in 1927. Felix the Cat, believed to be the first balloon based on a cartoon character to be flown above the city streets. Took a team of 25 handlers to steer a 40-by-23-foot Mickey Mouse, who made his first appearance at the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade in 1934. So, how do they do this? Well, all the balloons are filled with 12,000 cubic feet of helium. They're pumped. That much is pumped into each one on the eve of the parade. In 1958, a helium shortage forced the parade planners to think outside the box. They opted to pump the balloons with regular air and then suspend them from construction cranes to keep them upright. Let me see. Oh, from 1928 to 1932, this was a cruel trick. Macy's decided they weren't going to deflate the balloons anymore. They were just going to unleash them into the sky. And if you found one, they'd give you $25 to return it. The first one to land was in 1928, was a tiger. It landed on a roof in Long Island. And then the residents there went crazy fighting each other trying to claim the $25. Let me see. Find some of the other ones. All right, this is how they deflate the balloons. Just like if you have an air mattress in your house, you got to roll it up and you sit on it and you press the valve, it's all the air will come out. Well, that's kind of what they do with the balloons. They unzip them to let out the helium. They lay on top of the balloon and then roll it up to squeeze out any remaining air. A skilled hand can deflate a balloon in 15 minutes or less. So there you go. The balloons were stopped between 1942 and 1944, you realize why, because World War II. Then Macy's donated 650 pounds of rubber that would have otherwise been used in the balloons to the U.S. military. In 1932, balloon enthusiasts outside the Big Apple could gather around a radio to tune in to the parade. It wasn't until 1945 when NBC camera crews hit the scene. Now, who does it now? Al Roker is always there. Matt Lauer used to be there. I don't think they let Matt Lauer come to the parade anymore. They probably, well, he could probably go to the parade. He's just not broadcasting the parade. Each float has 100 to 200 pounds of glitter. Popeye, the spinach-eating sailor, caused one balloon mishap. Heavy rains in 1957 accumulated in the brim of his hat and overflowed and drenched all the spectators. So there you go. And the parade was first viewed in a movie in Miracle on 34th Street. So there you go. Now you know all about the Macy's Parade when you watch it on Thursday. So I got to talk to these, I got to talk to the people here in Chicago about the Chicago Parade. See if I can become a balloon handler. I wonder how much training goes into that. What do you think? What would I have to do? I can walk already, and I can hold things. I should be pretty well trained. I should have my resume should speak for itself. But perhaps not. Perhaps they're just going to say, "Well, we see what you're doing, but no, we don't want you there." So that what time? When is the Chicago parade happening? I always feel bad when I talk about the Macy's parade and things in New York, because I don't mean to give short shrift to the Chicago Thanksgiving parade, because we have a wonderful city and a wonderful parade. But, you know, you talk about the granddaddy of them all. That's the thing. And the Macy's parade is definitely the granddaddy of them all. The Chicago Thanksgiving Day parade start time is
8 a.m.
8 a.m. And there are people dancing. It's a tradition, dates back to the 30s. Throughout the day, the performers will stop at a main stage at Washington and Randolph. You'll be able to see all the action along State Street. If you'd rather, you can watch it on, let's see, starts at 8 o'clock. Parade takes place down State Street. It'll start at Congress and travel north to Randolph. Expect big crowds. Pass. Weather forecast, 40s and sunny. That's not too bad. It'll be on WGN-TV. I should have known that. They're our sister station. I don't know if you know that, Dan. We share the same call letters. So, yeah, they're going to be on WGN. I don't know. Ooh, I wonder if Dean's. I wonder if Dean is part of the parade this year. We should get a float. You know, I know the radio station, we have floats in the Pride Parade, which is very cool. But we need to get some. But we need to get a float in some of these other parades. You know, Pride Parade's a big parade. It's fun. I got to march with them one year, but we gotta up our game. Include more parades. Nice St. Patrick's Day parade float. Get up there all liquored up. That'd be fun. Throw tchotchkes to the adoring crowd. Maybe go to the Thanksgiving parade. I got a turkey hat. Do something like that. Just be fun. Fun, fun, fun. But I don't think they want to do that. You know, money. It's always budget. Well, sure, we'd do a float, but, you know, we won't pay you for the next 6 months. I go, boy, if that's all it takes to get a float, go ahead. Really? I didn't know floats were that cheap. Go ahead and enjoy yourself. So I like that. You know what I like about the Thanksgiving Day parade here in town? That it still goes down State Street. Because a lot of the parades have moved over to Columbus, which I get. It's a little more wide open. You can get the crowds into the park and stuff. It's fun. But there's something about a parade going down in the middle of the city. Because back when I was in high school and I used to march in the St. Patrick's Day parade a lot, it was down State Street. And I like it better. I like the feel of it better. I like the tall buildings surrounding you. It gives you that kind of, you know, ticker tape parade kind of feel. But, you know, the city, they don't want to tie things up. We can't tie things up. It's a business district. Goofball, you can't be having parades in there. I don't know what, I do not know what balloons are going to be here this year. I got to find out. We got to see if we can get some information on that. I know they had a big Grover last year. At Fred Flintstone, they've had Arthur, and of course, the big turkey. So, there you go. That's what's happening. So you can see the parade here. Watch it on GN. And I always feel bad. I feel bad, too. I'm wrecked with guilt. Silly guilt. Because I'll be watching Macy's, and I say, I should watch the Chicago parade. So then I have to keep flipping channels. Because I don't want to commit. I don't want my hometown to feel second class. That's not it at all. Not it at all. All right, would you leave detailed instructions for grandparents? You do it for babysitters. Would you do it for grandparents? That's the question we will delve into next on WGN. All right, here's the question. You would leave, when you get a babysitter for your kids, you leave them all sorts of directions. You leave them the numbers where you can be reached, bedtimes, what the kids should eat, if they need to do homework. You leave all kinds of instructions for them. Would you do the same, or should you do the same, if you're leaving them with their grandparents? I know part of, you know, you hear grandparents say this all the time. I am not a grandparent. Despite the fact that the other day a girl in school asked me if I was a grandfather. I said, why, do I look like a grandpa? And she said, yes. I said, oh, well, thanks. Thanks for making my day, toots. I know grandparents say, listen, part of being a grandparent is you could do whatever you want. I know that's how my mom was when we would leave Molly with her. We'd tell her things, knowing full well that she and my dad at the time were going to do whatever they wanted. And I know grandparents say that all the time. Oh, we can spoil the kids. That's our job. We're supposed to spoil them. And I think, well, you were parents too, and you didn't spoil the kids. But all right, that's fine. So this one mom that was quoted in the story I read, she gave her parents a list. She's a mother of two in Atlanta. She gave them a list, an instruction manual, so to speak. Quote, I gave them a typed, single-space, three-page document that was, as I look back now, embarrassingly detailed and patronizing. Yeah, that I can see that, because new parents believe that they are the first people to ever give birth. And I will say that I fell into this, and I think Debbie did as well. When we had Molly, we thought we knew best, because we had just read all the books. You know, our parents, they didn't have books. No, they didn't have, they had Dr. Spock, maybe. But, you know, all he knew was how to fly the Enterprise. He had no idea how to raise babies. She told them to wash their hands before preparing food. She treated them like people who could not take care of themselves, let alone a baby. So, despite knowing our parents and in-laws have years of experience looking after their own families, so much has changed. See, this is the problem with too much information. All these things have changed. We've learned all different things. And so now we think that the people who actually raised kids before are not going to be able to do it. So we have to make sure that we tell Grandma and Grandpa how to do this. We leave them long lists. Dealing with relatives is different from hiring a sitter. We want to avoid offending grandparents, particularly true when it comes to health and safety, where research has shown the way things were done 40 years ago differs from how we do and what we know now, what is best. And that's true. It's like we were talking about before with our food preparation. Well, this is how we always did it, and everything was fine. You know, back when I was a baby, or back when your parents were babies, their parents did things differently, your parents did things differently, and now we've learned that that's not the way. I mean, just think about the simple act of taking a kid in a car. You know, when I was young, we had a kind of car seat, but it was one that just hooked over the back of the seat. Nothing was strapped in. It was two little metal arms that hooked over the back of the seat, and the kid just sat in there. So, or the kids didn't sit in a seat at all. They were just buckled up, or not buckled up at all. So we've learned, okay, you have to put your kid in a car seat. One of these elaborately designed Machiavellian car seats that there's no way you can figure out unless you have an 18-page manual. But we know then that our children are safe if we put them in right, which is the other thing with the car seats, because, you know, you see reports all the time. People have these elaborate car seats and they don't have them in. So really, the kid could just go flying out of the car anyway. But, well, I added in a seat. Well, good. Now it's very compact. So we do have different ways of watching our kids than our parents did. Now, that doesn't mean that our parents need to have every little thing, or grandparents need to have every little thing spelled out for them. Because, quite frankly, the reason you were able to write that list is because they raised you when you're alive, so that you got to give them a little credit for that. They at least got you to the point where you can treat them like they don't know anything, which is very nice. So how can parents approach the topic in a sensitive way without creating a rift? You have to discuss the concerns and clarify which ones are real deal breakers. There's a course now called Grandparents Now. It will include research and advice and will focus on how to navigate the relationship between parents and grandparents. Trying to impose your way of doing things on your parents can cause quarrels that could last for years. Yeah, nobody wants to be told that they don't know how to do stuff, especially people who've already raised children. So pick your battles. If you are leaving your children, your newborns, or your young children with grandparents, pick your battles. Only insist on things that are really important. Because we know part of the role, as I mentioned before, of grandparents is to spoil their kids. So, you know, unless your kid has an unbelievably dangerous allergy to something, to tell a grandparent they're never allowed to give your kid a treat, well, figure that one's going to get broken. Unless you say to the grandparents, listen, Junior here is horribly allergic to nuts. You cannot give him nuts or any nut product or horrible things will happen. Well, then you should expect them to follow that edict. And if they don't, well, then there's a problem. But if you just say, I don't believe that my child should ever have a cookie because cookies are a gateway junk food, blah, blah, blah. Chances are at some point the grandparents giving that kid a cookie. And then saying, don't tell your mother, don't tell your father, which puts the grandparent and the kid in a weird position because now the kid has to lie to his mom or dad because grandma or grandpa slipped him a Nilla wafer. And the kid thinks, you know, the kid's all traumatized. What do I do? Who do I lie to? I love that cookie. Do I love grandma more because she gave me the cookie? Oh, now I see how evil my mom is. This is not working out at all. Why did she go away? See, if you hadn't gone to the movies, I'd still love you. Boy. So they said this woman who left the very detailed things, too much, too detailed, but better than just suggestions. So you have to make sure you're clear, but not overly psychotic about it. Let them know, you know, some of the instructions covered issues that had changed since her own parenting, the importance of tummy time. And having no bumper in the crib, being careful about blankets and other. Yeah, I mean, I see that now. Like when Molly was a baby, we did all this stuff. But then there were wedges too. It's like every few months, there's different ways to have a baby sleep. And what's safe. So I wouldn't want to take care of a baby now. At bedtime, because I wouldn't know. Do you put it on his tummy? Do you put it on his back? Do you have to wedge it in? I know you don't put any blankets in there, but how does a baby stay warm if it doesn't have blankets? What are you putting it in a down snowsuit to sleep? There's a lot of things. We had a wedge that you wedged under the baby, so they didn't, because they thought that was, you know, going to protect the way they sleep. I don't know. So have your children treated you like an imbecile because they didn't think you knew how to take care of a baby? It would be tough. I'm glad I don't have to deal with that now because as my mom has gotten older, and I think we all do this, as we get older, we become more set in our ways. And they're going to do things their way no matter what you say. And there's a difference between, you know, I'm going to take this route to go to your house because this is how I've always done it, or I'm going to put the baby in here because that's how I did it when you were a kid. So it's that fine line. But I think it's a responsible move as a parent to give some sort of list, but then, you know, write your initial instructions, then walk away from them for a little bit, then go back and read them with fresh eyes and go, ooh, yeah, they probably know not to give her a fork around the outlets. I don't need to include that. Yes, no toasters in the bathtub. I think Dad remembers that from when I was a kid, so we'll cross that off the list. I'm gonna just assume that he knows what's going on. All right, a zero-tolerance policy has led to a very embarrassing and horrifying situation for one young boy. We are going to talk about that on the other side of the news. Coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio.